I saw like 15 people yawn while I was up here. It's like the wave. It was, I was trying to run from it. I didn't want to get to me. I want to catch it. Well, I start yawning. I coached football for years. Usually it was little kids like 9, 7, 8, 9, 9, 10, 11. Those are the best ones because they don't know anything and they do what you tell them to do. They get about 13, it's worthless because then they think they're athletes and they're going to play in the NFL. But when I was coaching 7, 8, 9-year-olds, and I did it for consecutive years, there was this one coach that I coached against that I don't want to say it was a rivalry because, and let's get real, there's 7, 8, 9-year-olds. Do we have rivalries? You know, most of the time we're just trying to herd cats when you have that kind of age. But I had such good players that it kind of felt like at times I was cheating. And I kind of was. I mean, I totally recruited my own players. But this guy was not a huge fan of mine, and I wasn't a fan of his, and it was no secret. But we played each other. One year we had to play each other 4 times. And the first game that we played each other, my kids went out there, and the guy started complaining that a couple of my kids didn't have the appropriate uniform wear. And so he was right, and so those kids couldn't play. So, I mean, I still crushed him. So, I'm not, totally upset about it. We played the second time. And once again, he came out there, and he had a list of things that I hadn't done yet. So one of my kids had mismatched socks. One of them didn't have a mouthpiece. And I said, what difference does it make? They're 7, 8, 9. What are they going to do? Just let them play. But they wouldn't let us do that. Again, I beat the tar out of him, so it wasn't, it's not that big of a deal. You notice I'm not, holding back here. We played the third time, and of course I beat him, but once again he had some things that but at this point I'm a little upset because he's just trying to go around to find ways to beat me. And by the time we got to the fourth game, somehow 3 of my boys got kicked out of the game or had to sit out of the game because of they were being too rough or something else. I don't know. Never mind the fact it's football, but they were being too rough or something. Well, now I'm down to 4 players, or I'm down to under the limit that I could be in this little bitty game, and the referee said, you're going to have to forfeit. And I said, this is stupid. I said, we're already ahead. Just let me win. Why even play the rest of the game? And it got so bad that at the end, me and the coach were heading out to the middle of the field to, quote, unquote, shake hands. But we were not going to shake hands. We were going to try to shake each other. Because at this point, I'm hot. And it's pretty hot outside, and I'm pretty angry. And we're heading to the middle of the field. And right when we get to the middle of the field, the referee steps between us. And says, why don't we not shake hands this time around, folks? He said, why don't we just go home? So I go back to my car, and the referee goes with me. And I said, I think I'm done. I don't want to coach anymore. I'm done with this. And he said, you forgot why you got into this. I said, I got into this to coach ball. He said, no, you got into this because you love those kids. But you've allowed your hatred for this person to now overshadow why you got in it in the first place. And you've allowed your wanting to win to overshadow the kids winning. He said, when you lose your temper on the field, those kids lose. When you make it about uniforms and when you guys go against each other, those kids lose. He said, you're stressing the kids out. And I said, well, it's a game, so they should be stressed out. He said, they should be stressed out at the game. They shouldn't be stressed out because they're coach. He said, there's a difference. And the referee was right. I forgot. The next year I went to register, and they actually told me no. I thought they were kidding. 1, because I'm good. 2, because I had good players. 3, because, well, I'm good. So I should, I should get to do that. And they'd send me an email that, no, they'd had enough coaches. And I called the referee who was over the thing, and I said, hey, are you serious? He said, I just want to make sure that you're ready to coach a team and not coach yourself. I just want to make sure. He said, and if you can agree to do that, then we'll get it done. And I actually had to think about it. I think at times we forget why we're doing stuff in the first place. I mean, let's think about this. How many of you still have something at Christmas? You have no idea why you still have it. Nobody eats that stuff. I mean, seriously. How many of you still have canned cranberries that you just... you know, put out on the plate. Nobody eats it, but you still provide it. I don't know why. We've just always had it. We've just always done it that way, and I'm just going to let it, you know, I'm not going to do the sound again, but you know, it just flops out of the can. I don't know why we're doing it, or we still make stuffing that way, even though it's got so much sage in it, nobody eats it, but we're still going to make it how we want to make it. Never mind the fact nobody's eating it, but we still want to make it that way. There are so many things you and I do in life because we want to do it that way, and we forget why we're doing it. One of those things is prayer. One of them's prayer. If you have your Bibles, I want to go to Matthew 6. I don't want to go to anywhere else, because in Matthew 6, what Jesus says, I've told you the Sermon on the Mount is about three things: your relationship with God, your relationship with people, and your relationship with stuff. And the text that Jaheim read is the only time in the Sermon on the Mount when all three collide. Prayer is about your relationship with God, your relationship with people, and your relationship with stuff. So let me tell you this on the front end instead of the back end, instead of the invitation part. If in your life you're not right with me or with somebody else on the field, if in your life your stuff is running the show, you're wasting your time praying. I mean, you pray if you want. I guess you can if you want to, but it's a colossal waste of time. It really is. And you shouldn't think that Jesus would say that it's a total waste of time, because he absolutely would say that. You know the other things that he says in the Sermon on the Mount? You've heard it was said, thou shalt not kill. You know, you heard it was said, thou shalt not commit adultery. You heard it was said to love your neighbor, but hate your enemy. And Jesus says, let me tell you the truth here. Some of your Bibles say, verily, verily. Verily, verily means pay attention. Highlight this. Verily, verily, I tell you, if you can't get along with your brother or your sister, whether you kill them or not, it's irrelevant. You already have. So Jesus is really concerned. Here's how I know what's going on. Look at chapter 6, verse 9. Jesus says, this then is how you should pray. This text is not about prayer. I mean, it is, but it's not. You know how I know that? Because this is a Bible-thumping church. We're people of the book. We like to do Bible things, Bible ways. That's why we don't have instruments up here. I mean, it's a biblical read. We do Bible things, Bible ways. Y'all said it as long as I have. Where the Bible speaks, and where the Bible is silent, where? Yeah, well, some of you remember it. Some of you are looking at me like you have no idea what I'm talking about. But you understand. We do Bible things, Bible ways, and here's how I know this ain't about prayer. Because Brother Bill East just got up here and said three prayers. Three. During communion. We all hear them. And then somebody else, who prayed? Who did opening prayer? I forgot. Yeah, that's right. Brother Mitch. Brother Ralph. So what have we had? Did Johnny say a prayer during announcements? Johnny, did you say a prayer? Okay, so we've only had four, right? It's been 35 minutes, and we've already had four prayers. Now, y'all know these. Y'all heard them just like I did. We was all in here. I didn't hear a single prayer that said, our Father in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom. Y'all didn't hear it. I didn't hear it. But Jesus said, this is how you should pray. So if Jesus said, this is how you should pray, then why didn't Brother Eads do that prayer every time he prayed? Because this text is not about prayer. I mean, it is, but it's not. This prayer is about your attitude. It's about where you are when you go to pray. It's not about playing the game. It's about who's showing up to the game. What kind of attitude do you have when you show up to the game? I used to have to sit in the car and breathe out my anger. Just to who I play. I still do. Not here, of course, because I like all you. But you know, I had to get my mind right before I stepped in. Because as soon as you step out, here come all them kids wanting something. Oh, I forgot my mouthpiece. Oh, I forgot my flags. Oh, my shoe's untied. Oh, I'm thirsty. Coach, I'm hungry. Coach, I forgot this. Coach, can you take me home? So I had to get right. I think Jesus, when he talks about prayer, he doesn't mean when y'all sit down to dinner, when we do communion, we say, our Father in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Jesus wants you to understand, he wants you to be somewhere with each other and with your stuff and with God before you ever come. And church, if you don't get right, you're wasting your time. You're wasting your time. All of us. I mean, just go get coffee. It's a better use of your time. Don't waste it on prayer if we're not going to get right. This prayer is divided into two sections. There's three things he tells you, and then he tells you three more things. That's it. Three and three. I know y'all, I like three-point sermons. Well, it's three and three, which it doesn't mean that the sermon's twice as long. It just means I got to go twice as fast, okay? Which I know some of y'all think that's not possible, but it is, I assure you. There's three things he wants you to understand before you ever pray. And then there's three things he wants you to understand about your prayer. Let me show you, see if I can show you how to, what this is doing. Look at that first line. He says, "Our Father in heaven," my Bible says, "hallowed be thy name." Well, it doesn't have a thy. I'm doing what I memorized as a six-year-old. I think it's King James. So, "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name." Hallowed. I don't know how to say this in English. No, let your name be holified. It's not a word. I just made it up. But let your name be holy. He wants his name to be holy. Here's the first thing you need to understand about prayer. Before you ever go to God in prayer, what you need, your attitude needs to be, is that God's in charge. God's in charge. God is not an ATM. You don't get to go to God, put your card in, here's what I want, and if it comes out, great, and if it doesn't come out, I get mad. God's in charge. When you go to God, before you go to God, please understand, he's in charge. The last church I was at, I had an elder who was retired from the Army. I don't remember what he was, but he was high up. He was a retired officer. We always got along. There were a couple of times we butted heads. Imagine that. Just a couple of times. But I remember one of those times I came into my office and I was hot. I mean, I don't mean like I looked good. I mean like I was, or, you know, I mean I do. But I mean like, you know, I was irritated. And I wanted to tell him that this is what I thought we need to do with the church. And I was emotional and I was revved up, and he came in. And before he ever said anything, I looked at him in the eyes and I said, "Permission to speak freely." But he had taught me that because I had gotten in enough trouble with just flying off the handle about what I wanted, and my manner got in the way of my manners. The way I was asking was setting them off. But when I said permission to speak freely, he knew what I was asking. What I was asking was, may I just look incredibly stupid for a minute and you not be mad at me? And Chuck looked at me and he said, "Go ahead, Junior." If he would have said no, I wouldn't have said anything. Because I respected there's an authority in the room. And no matter how bad I want to do something, I got to respect there's somebody bigger than me. My dad always taught me, everybody got a boss. Everybody got a boss. You may think you ain't got a boss. You got a boss. Everybody might be your customers, but everybody's got a boss. Everybody. And what we need to understand when we go to God in prayer, this ain't no ATM. He's in charge. But look at the next section, because Jesus turns it just a little bit. Let thy kingdom come. So not only is God in charge, what you need to do is to tell God to be in charge. No matter what I ask, I want you to be in charge. Hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come. No matter what I'm about to ask you, you're in charge. And I want you to take charge. And then Jesus turns it one more time, the third. Let thy will be done. And what he's saying there is, don't let me get in your way. You know how many times you get in God's way? You know how many times, how many of you have gone to God and asked him for something, but you're already on the way to getting it? You're already signing the papers for the new car. Oh, dear Lord, bless this car. Did you ask him for this car? Or did you just ask him to bless what you already did? I mean, seriously. I've actually done things, and I thought, ooh, we didn't pray about this. Let me sneak one in real quick. We're already doing it. So was God in charge at all? Or is you in charge? You. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be thy name. You're in charge here. I want you to be in charge, and I don't want you to let me get in the way, because if you let me get in the way, I will get in. Y'all know me. I'll get in your way. You know, I want my way every time, and I don't like not getting my way. So I ask nicely. I try to be hokey about it, whatever I got to do to get my way, and usually I do, because I'm a nice guy. Y'all nice people, and you just let me have my way. But what you have to tell God is, don't let me have my way. Because I'll tell you, God will let you have it. You know how many times God's just let me do whatever I want? You're going to do it anyway, Adam. You're going to do it. What you asking me for? You're going to do it anyways. How many of you have kids that asked your advice, but you knew what they were always going to do? I was just wondering, you know, do you think, you know, you would do this, and you tell them no, and they'll do it anyway. They don't care. They're just asking you as a formality. They're just asking you so you feel like they care about you. They don't. They're going to do what they want anyway. Now, transfer that to prayer. How many of you have done that to God? Lord, I'm going to ask you for something. I've already done it, but I want to ask you anyway just so I feel better about it. Don't waste your time. Don't waste his time. Before you ask God for anything, who's in charge? Let him be in charge and do not get in his way. On the same, I had an assistant coach who was more patient than I was. And we had a kid at one point miss a tackle. And he grabbed the kid and he said, "You know why you missed that tackle?" And the kid said, "Because I wasn't fast enough." And Jay said, "Nope." He said, "Because the other kid's better than me." He said, "Nope." He said, "You know why you missed that tackle?" The little boy said, "No." He said, "You wasn't lined up where you need to be." He said, "I told you to line up here. You're lining up here. No point in even playing this game if you're not lined up right." Church, there ain't no point even praying if you're not lined up right. Unless you've got your mind right, don't waste your time. Unless you understand who's in charge, who's going to be in charge, and unless you're willing not to get in his way, I don't really know why you ask him for anything. I don't know why you're going to God at all. You're going to do what you want. But when you go to God, Jesus gives us those last three. Jesus changes the way we think about prayer and what it is. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And then he has these three commands that he gives God. Give us today our what? Daily bread. He doesn't say, give us our bread. Give us today our daily bread. I've told some of y'all this. I may have told all of you this. I'm not sure God has tomorrow worked out yet. I'm not sure he does. I'm not sure that's on. Some of y'all have calendars. Y'all already got Christmas. We already got Christmas sewn up. We know where we're going to be. We got the holidays done. I'm not sure God's calendar goes beyond midnight. I mean, I want to believe that he knows the future, but I'm not sure he's really looking at it. God works one day at a time. Do you know why? Because you got enough going on in your life to fill a day. Your life is stressful enough with a day. And we try to add to it by worrying about tomorrow or by worrying about 10 years from now. I've been with people in the hospital and they ask the doctor, "How long do I have?" And the doctor says 5 to 10 years. And the people just fall apart. 5 to 10 years. They just fall apart. My life is over. And I'm thinking to myself, I was hoping we just had today. What if the doctor said, "How long do I got?" "You got tomorrow." I wonder if the doctor said, "You got tomorrow." I wonder if we'd start valuing today. But some of us think we're going to live forever. Every day is a gift. Jesus says, we ask God just about today. How many of you are praying and you're not even praying about today? You're praying about 5 years from now, 5 months from now, 2 months from now, next week. Hey, why don't we just like back it up just today? Just right now. What's important right now? You remember when the manna fell in Israel and it fell on the ground and God gave them a commandment? He said, gather all you want, but don't only gather how much? For today. Don't gather for tomorrow. Now, I'm going to tell you, if I was in Israel, I'd have gathered for the whole week because I'm a worrywart. I mean, I know what God told me, but I'd have done it anyway. And I know, we all know what happened to the bread, right? You know, you gather too much, it gets all maggots in it, so I'd have paid the price. I know. I'd have learned my lesson. But God doesn't want you to gather more for today because he wants you to rely on him. You're asking about 10 years from now. Look, just ask him about today. Don't gather any more than today. So when we go to God in prayer, it's really just about today. Just dial it down to simple today. And then he gives that second piece. Forgive us of our debts as we forgive others. Here's the best part about prayer. God doesn't remember what you did yesterday. And some of you are still hanging on to that. When you ask God for forgiveness, it's gone. But some of you can't get over it. Some of you are still carrying around that weight from 10 years ago. Cut it loose. It's dragging down your prayer life. And you're still talking about it, and God keeps saying, I don't even remember what you're talking about. I don't even know what you're talking about. I forgot about that. And you keep bringing it up. Let it go. Let it go. Today. Not yesterday. Today. And then finally, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. God don't remember yesterday. God's concerned about today. But God will be here tomorrow. And he will lead you tomorrow. You don't even have to worry about tomorrow. God's got it. He got it. He's got it tomorrow. You just handle today. Today's got enough problems. I wonder what would happen to our prayer life if we got our mind right. And instead of looking at all the things, I mean, you know how many things I need to go to God for? I got some credit card issues. I need to go on and take that to him. Now, let me just ask y'all this because y'all are more experienced than I am. Is God going to take my credit card bill away? Are you serious? Here I've been, you know, oh Lord. I mean, I know, I believe in miracles. Just, you know, that he never does one for me. But I believe in miracles. But do y'all really think the Lord's going to come down and take these interest payments away? Some of you are scared to say no. Like, well, we got to, you know, but let's be real here, okay? Is the Lord going to come down and work with Chase and cut a deal? And all of a sudden, Chase, hey, we spoke to the Lord. We've been inspired by God. It could happen. I'm not saying it couldn't. It could happen. But how many of you really believe that? Some of y'all credit cards got 29% interest. You know, we need Jesus real quick to work this out. If you're going to God in prayer, oh, Lord, please take this credit card bill away. I don't want to tell you you're wasting your time. I'm just not sure you got your mind right. Because you're thinking about, you know, you just paid that credit card minimum payment, $110. And you're thinking about getting this bill paid off. That's next month. What you worried about? You already paid the bill. You already paid the bill. Jesus might come back tomorrow. And you know who gets to pay the bill? Your kids. It's okay. You get to go be with Jesus. And you were stressing about it. I'm not sure God ever promises to take away all your stress. Here's what I am sure that he promises. That today, he can help you get through it. And you say, I know, but that's just today. Guess what you're going to have to do tomorrow? You're going to have to come back. You're going to have to get some more manna tomorrow. You're going to have to come back to God and pray again. Oh, I got to pray every day? Oh, now we go. Here we go. I just used to pray in the dinner and praying at church. Praying before I go to bed. Dear Lord. That's, for a lot of us, that's our prayer life. Dinner. The three times we did it here, opening prayer, closing prayer, we got five prayers in on Sunday morning. Some of you come back Sunday night, that's seven. The way I see it, hey, that's once a day. So we got seven for the week, right? What would happen to our spiritual lives if our prayer lives started praying that much every day? And what if we just went to God just about today, and when God gets us through today, then it was a good day. See, this is really about prayer, but it's really not about prayer at all. It's about dependence. Jesus wants you to depend on God and not your stuff. And you know how you learn how to depend on God? I know y'all don't want to hear this. You depend on others. There's not a single person in this room right now who says, you know what I want to do when I grow up? I want to go to the nursing home. I bet you all the money in my pocket, which is nothing, so I can't get in trouble. But I would bet you all the money in my pocket. There's not a single person in here whose wildest dream is, oh, I can't wait to go to Shady Pines and have somebody feed me, clothe me, and all the other things they're going to do to me when we go to Shady Pines. There's not a single person in here because you don't want to rely on somebody else. You'd rather die than to be a burden to your family. I know, I've heard it from all of you. I just don't want to be a burden to anybody. What if it was okay to be a burden to someone? What if that's what you're supposed to learn? to depend on others. Do you know why we have trouble depending on God? Because we don't want to depend on anybody else. And by the time we get to God, I've never depended on anybody in my life. And I don't know how to depend on God. You know where you learn to depend on God? The church. This is the ground right here. This is where we learn to depend on God. And I know y'all don't want to depend on anybody. I know y'all don't want to be a burden to anybody. I think we're supposed to. I think we're supposed to learn to lean on each other. Go to John chapter 21. Let me show you a verse. John 21 verse 18. Anybody see the movie Driving Miss Daisy? It's an old movie. I mean, it's not that old, but I mean, it's like, what is it, 1980? It got to be late 80s. It's got to be. Don't Google it now. Google it later. Some of you are going, do that later. But if you haven't seen Driving Miss Daisy, you missed out. It was a good movie. And don't watch it now. Watch it later. Miss Daisy is played by Jessica Tandy, and her driver, Hoke, is played by Morgan Freeman, who does I think they both won awards for their performances. But Hoke is an African-American man who's hired, I think it's before the civil rights, but he's hired to drive around Miss Daisy, and Miss Daisy is an elderly, Jewish, grumpy old lady. And when her son hires Hoke to drive her around, she gets in the car and she says, "I don't want you, Hoke. I don't need you. I don't like you." And the whole movie, it's meant to be one of them teary, feel-good, tear-jerky, kind of movies. But the real intent of the movie and the play before it was to show the change in this rigid, angry woman. And throughout the movie, you see that anger start to get chipped away. And the reason it gets chipped away is because she has to learn to rely on the man she doesn't want, she doesn't need, and she doesn't like. And here you thought you was going to rely on people you liked. I've got a friend who's he's a lot older than me, but he's been very adamant his stance on homosexuality, very adamant. And one of his sons is gay, and this friend of mine is in his 70s. He stopped talking to the son who married the man. Just stopped talking to him. Didn't talk for years. And this man had a stroke. And he can't move his limbs. He can move his mouth. He can talk. But he can't move. And he has to be in a facility. And every day, his son's husband comes and feeds him. And I went the first few times and I saw the anger. But he wasn't a thing he could do about it. He had to sit there and get fed. I'm not saying who's right. All I'm saying is, this ain't the guy he thought was going to be feeding him. Somebody had to do it. And his sons are worthless. They're worthless. But his son's husband fed him. I'm not, this isn't one of those sermons. But he never ever thought he'd have to depend on the woman he didn't need, he didn't want, and he didn't like. Guess what? Do now. Let me tell y'all something. Whatever you think you ain't ever gonna do, better recognize who's in charge, because it ain't you. And the people you don't want and you don't need and you don't like, guess who's going to be making their way into your life? So instead of being afraid instead of going home, "Oh man, who's it going to be?" Why don't we start concentrating on needing and liking everybody? Because it's going to be you. In John 21, verse 18, this is the Jesus about to leave, and he's got to give some advice to Peter. Y'all remember how Peter is, right? Peter likes his own way. He likes to do things his own way. And Jesus says, John 21, verse 18, he says, I tell you the truth. When you were younger, you dressed yourself. You went where you wanted. But when you get old, you're going to stretch out your hands. Somebody else is going to dress you. And somebody else is going to lead you where you do not want to go. Now, Jesus says this to indicate the kind of death Peter's going to undergo. But the point here is the same. You will learn to be dependent on someone else. You want your prayer life to get better? Then your life has to get better. They go hand in hand. And how you pray to God will be affected by your relationship with other people and your relationship with stuff. Did y'all notice in that line back in Matthew, Lord, forgive us of our debts as... We skipped over that second part. You remember that second part? Forgive us of our debts as we forgive our debtors. You notice he didn't say, forgive us of our debts so that we can forgive. Forgive us of our debts because we... Oh no, Jesus just assumes, forgive us as we at the same time are forgiving everybody else. So let me ask y'all this, church, because I'm done. Let me ask you this. What if you ain't forgiving nobody? Forgive us. Just forgive us. You're wasting your time. Wasting your time. Because your prayer life with God is affected by your life with others. I've told y'all about this book, Amish Peace, by Suzanne Fisher. If you don't have it, you should have it. It's a great book. Everybody ought to read it. It's called Amish Peace by Suzanne Fisher. And in this book, she tells a story about a young teenager named Joel. And Joel is living in Amish country. And he's driving in his car, and he sees this Amish buggy. And he says, I'm going to blow past. I'm going to blow past this, but they're going too slow. So Joel pulls out. But right when he did, the buggy turned left. Joel was going 70 miles an hour. And he hit that buggy straight on. The girl in that buggy's name was Sarah. He killed her instantly. There's parts of the buggy everywhere. He hit it so hard that he hit Sarah so hard that he knocked Sarah 100 feet away. Not only did Joel feel horrible about what happened, but his journey took him where he never thought it would go. Joel had someone in the car too, and they died. And at the funeral for this person, Joel went, and when he walked into the funeral home, it was filled with the Amish. And they all came to tell Joel how sorry they were that his friend had died. And then they invited Joel to Sarah's funeral, the woman he killed. He said he got there and there's just buggies everywhere. He said the first person that came out and shook his hand was Sarah's father. And he said by the time he got to the funeral, Sarah's husband met him. Joel said, the man put his arms around me and he said three words I'll never forget. He said, we forgive you. And these are the words I love the most in this book. Joel said, I felt forgiveness crawl all over me. It just crawled all over him. They invited Joel to church. The entire community petitioned the judge to drop the charges. Joel later got married. The entire community attended his wedding. Joel went on a mission trip, and guess who financially supported the whole thing? You see, the Lord knows we need forgiveness. We must have it or we'll die. And the Lord knows that if you don't get your debts forgiven, that you'll die of grief and guilt. And so he just wants you to understand that before you ask him for forgiveness, you make sure you're forgiving others before you ever ask. Because if you're not, you're wasting your time. See, this is about prayer, but it's really not. It's about you. It's about your prayer life, but really it's not. It's about your life. It's about, I guess, what we're supposed to be saying to God, but it's really not. It's about how you feel towards God and how you feel towards me and how you feel towards your stuff. And if you don't have all that worked out, I mean, you can go ahead and pray. I'm not telling anybody not to pray, but probably do some better stuff with your time. We got to take prayer seriously, and if we're going to take prayer seriously, we got to take each other seriously. We got to take ourselves seriously. Y'all remember the end of that movie, Driving Miss Daisy? Remember what the last scene was? Miss Daisy's in the nursing home. I don't know if it's Shady Pines. I make that up, but she was in the nursing home. And her son's there. Son was played by Dan Aykroyd. Yeah. And her son's sitting there, and he's, you know, mama, you know, and trying to tell her what to do. And she's still a elderly, grumpy woman. She's angry. And he's trying to talk to her. And here comes Hoke. It's Morgan Freeman. He's got white hair now, and he sits down. And Hoke's old, too. And she's smiling at him, and they're talking back and forth. And right before the credits roll, he says, Miss Daisy, he said, you didn't eat your Thanksgiving pie. She looks down at it, and she goes to get the fork. She can't pick up her fork. She's shaking too much. And Hoke says, I got it. And the movie ends with this man cutting up this pie and feeding it to this woman who didn't like him, who didn't need him, who didn't want him. And every time he feeds her, she just smiles, nods her head. You see, this movie was about driving Miss Daisy, but really it was about changing Miss Daisy. She was changed because she learned to depend on someone else. This morning, if you've been trying to be full, you've been trying to be, you're spiritually hungry, and you don't know why. You're always full, but it's just never enough. Maybe we stop trying to be full. Maybe you try to be filled instead of being full. Maybe you've been eating what you wanted to eat, but maybe it's time for you to let someone feed you. Might taste better. Might pray better. Might live longer. We might live better. Maybe we could do that. If we can help you, if we can feed you, won't you come while together we stand and sing?